Okay, we're starting here on the top of Tzadi Aleph Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the Mishnah. The Mishnah laid out a general principle about chashivut and giving significance to certain items that you would carry on Shabbat. The Mishnah makes it clear that even if we say that there is subjective quality to the assignment of significance to an object that you carry, that would only be relevant to yourself, but not to anyone else. Anyone else would not be governed by your personal preferences with regards to size. They'll be governed by the standard shi'urim that are involved. So the Gemara says about that, "B'chol adam ein chayvin alav ela kishi'uro." Matnitin delok Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. A Mishnah, it's clearly not like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who we had bumped into earlier in the Masechta, the Tanya. Klala ma'ar Rabbi Shimon Elazar, bo she'enu kasher la'atzniya, ve'en matzniin gamahu, v'chok she'er la'zeh, v'itzniyo, u'bacher v'hotzi, nitchayev zeh, b'makshad vo she'el zeh. So you have a braita, the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar lays out a principle. Anything that is not normally put away or stored, and people don't put away this type of size or item, but this person decided that he wanted to do such, and he stored it, and it was chashuv to him, and then a third party comes in and takes it out, that third party is governed by the machshava of the person who stored it. The person who stored it, who gave it significance, not only impacts himself, but impacts anybody who carries it. So, Amarav, Amarav Nachman, Hotzi, Rugo Geret, Le Achila, Venimlach, Ale Alizriya. What happens to an individual who took out a size of a krogeret, which is the normal size for Achila, something that you would be culpable for? Venimlach, Ale Alizriya. And then he changed his mind and decided that he was going to plant it and not eat it. Inami, or the other way around. Lirizriya v'nim lachalei la'achila. Took it out to plant it, and then he changed his mind and decided he was going to eat it. Chayav. In both these instances, he is chayav. Where it says, pshita, why would you have thought otherwise that he shouldn't be chayav over here? Zilhocha yikashiura. Zilhocha yikashiura. Since he had the minimum requirement or threshold for both of the uses or utilities of this item, meaning that if he already had grogogeret, which is the size that would make you chayav or culpable when you wanted to eat it, that's also plenty of size for Zriya, for planting. Planting has a lower threshold. So if you already met the threshold of the higher one, which is Achila, then why should it matter at this point? Whether he's carrying it for planting or carrying it for Achila, he met the minimum threshold. And just because he changed his mind along the way, why should that change the fact that he's culpable over here? That's what the Gemara said, that Pshita Zilhocha Yikashira, Zilhocha Yikashira. Gemara says, Ma'udu Teima Bein An Akira V'Anacha B'Chadu Makshova. Remember, Shabbat requires Melechet Makshevet. Melechet Makshevet means that you carry out the Melecha, but you carry it out with the intent that you had premeditated that which you had thought about originally. Over here, he's doing Akira and Anacha, which are the two component parts of carrying. Akira means to take it out of the location where it is, and anacha is to place it down in a new location. But each one of those now is under a different makshava, under a different thought. So maybe you need consistency between your akira and anacha. B'chada makshava, v'haleka, and that you don't have over here, kamash v'lan, that you still are culpable and you still are chayav. And that's the chiddush of Rava over here, that even though your akira and anacha are with different makshavot, with different intents, nevertheless, since you met the minimum threshold for both of them, you are considered to be culpable in this case. Now, this is going to set us up for a framework for a series of questions that play on this idea, which is by Rava. Hotzi, chatzi grogeret, lizriya. Takes out half a grogeret, half of a fig size, which is not big enough for achila, but lizriya, but it is big enough for planting. So when he took it out, he was culpable because he had a machshava to plant it, and he took out a size that was relevant for planting. Vitafcha. And then it expanded. It swelled. Benimlach ale ale achila. And he decides then he wants to eat it. Mau. What's the din over here? So when he took it out, there was only a size, a requisite size for planting, not for eating. But it expanded. The item swelled over time. And by swelling, it actually reached the minimum size that he need for achila. And that's what he did. He changed his mind for achila. What's the din? So the Gemara says, Imtim salomar. If you want to suggest. So here the Gemara is going to go through a series of these questions and then present an Imtim Salomar. If you say this is the answer, then what's the next question? So Imtim Salomar, Hotam Huda Mechayev. Why was Rava Mechayev in that first instance? The Zilhocha Ikashira, Zilhocha Ikashira. Because irrespective of what your thought was, whether it was eating or planting, in that case, you always had the minimum shear of Grogeret. Hocha, Kevin, the Afkol, at the moment that he took it out, Lo Havebe Shiur Achila. There was not enough to meet the threshold for achila, which is grogeret. So lo mechayev, therefore he would not be chayav o dilma. Kevan deilu ishtik. Had he made no more, said anything more, changed his mind at all, v'lo chashiv alei, and had no thoughts about it, mechayev. Because he started out with a machshava of zriah. So since he started with the machshava of zriah, if he did nothing else and continued and put it down, then he would have been chayav. So hashanami mechayev, even though he changed his mind, because when he changed his mind already, it expanded to a grogeret, to the size that he would be chayav for achila. But why should that be detrimental, or why should that ruin his original carrying? His original carrying was premised on zriah. Had he said absolutely nothing, he would have finished it up with zriah and been chayav. So now that he changes his mind and says, I'm going to eat it, and he has the requisite size at that point in time, why should that detract from the fact that he's now carried? So the Gemara concludes, v'imtim salomar. Generally, when the Gemara does this, especially for the Rambam usually paskins. If the Gemara says, imtim salomar, moves on to the next question, it means that the Gemara has come to a conclusion about this. It doesn't necessarily give you the proof or the reason why, but the Gemara comes to a conclusion, and therefore you'll see many times that when it says imtim salomar, that means that the Rambam is going to paskin that way, that we've concluded that piece. So v'imtim salomar, kevin dilu ishtik lo chashiv alei, had he been silent and not thought about it whatsoever, mechayev amachshava dezria, he would have been chayav for the machshava zria that he started with. Hashanami mechayev, so to over here, he'll be chayav. So now we pose the next question. Hotzi kegrogeret la'achila, he takes out a grogeret to eat, v'tzampa, and it shriveled up, it shrunk, v'nimlach alei zria, and he changed his mind now, and he wants to plant it, mahu, what's the din over here? So, hocha vaday ki ishtik, if he was silent, ach machshava kamaita lo mechayev. This wouldn't work here. If he kept the original machshava, he would not have been chayav. Because he started out thinking about achila, and he took out the requisite shear for achila, which is a grogeret. But by the time he's going to put it down, it's less than a grogeret. So if it's less than a grogeret, when he puts it down, he will never be able to complete that carrying process for achila. Because the achila itself would never get the requisite shiur, because it shrunk. On the other hand, because he changed his mind to zriah, now when he puts it down, it does have the shiur that you would need for zriah. He started out with achila and a grogeret. He finishes off with less than a grogeret, so had he stayed with that machshava of achila, nothing would have happened. He would not be chayav. But now that he changed his mind to zriah, which lowers the threshold, maybe he should be chayav in that case. Mao, what's the din over here? So the Gemara says, O Dilma, butter hashta azlinan umechayev. Or maybe we go after the now, the here and now, and he is chayav. We don't worry about what he started with, we worry about what he finished with. And again, once again, the Mar Gemara says, Vim tim salamar butter hashta azlinan. Gemara concludes, yes, let's go after the now. So he would be chayav in this case. What happens in a case of hotzi kuru gogeret la'achila? He takes out a gogeret worth for eating, which would make him chayav. Vitzamko, and it shriveled up. V'chazra v'tafko, and then it expanded or swelled again. Mahu, what's the din over here? Yesh dichui l'inyan Shabbat, or ain't dichui l'inyan Shabbat, teku. Here the Gemara leaves it as unresolved. Dichui is a concept that really comes up in Kodoshim mostly. Here the Gemara applies it in some other places. Shabbat is one of those places. Dichui means what happens if an object becomes unworthy or unusable for a period of time. So for whatever reason, it's disqualified for a period of time. But that period of time, you don't necessarily interact with it or need it at that time period. So if you were a kadesh, an animal, for a hekdesh, and then something happens that disqualifies it, but then that disqualification falls away. Now you want to put it on the mizbech. So when you're mekadesh it, the animal was fine. When you want to put it on the mizbech, it's fine. But something in the interim disqualified it. Does that disqualification in the interim ruin the animal? Does it take it out of the world of kodshim and say that you can no longer be makrivit? So the same thing here in Shabbat. When he took it out, he had the requisite shiur. When he put it down, he had the requisite shiur. The problem is in the interim, he lost the shiur that he needed. When he lost the shiur that he needed, did that interrupt his carrying? Does that somehow terminate his carrying? Because he picked it up when it was a grogeret. He's carrying it now. In the midst of his carrying it, it shrinks below the minimum shiur that he would require. At that point, is it over? Whatever he started with, the carrying that he started with is now over. And that means, because if he put it down at this moment, he would be patur. Because he could not get the proper hanacha. The size isn't right for hanacha. So it's as if his akira happened, and then that's it. Then when it comes back to the requisite shiur afterwards, we're missing the original akira because it's not connected, and all he has is a hanacha. So do we say that this shrinking in the middle somehow breaks up his carrying so that now the akira and hanacha are separate? Or do we say that at the moments that are important, which is the moment that he picked it up, and the moment that he put it down, at those moments, it was the right shiur, and that's all that matters. Because all that matter is those pivotal moments when you pick it up and put it down, anything in between is irrelevant. Or do we say that in between, if it loses this shiur, it interrupts your carrying, and it doesn't allow the akira, the picking up, to be connected to the hanacha, the placement down. And that the Gemara leaves as unresolved or a teiku. So the Gemara went through different iterations of cases, and each time it said imtim salomar, which seems to be that the Gemara concluded that this is the case. In this last case, the Gemara leaves it as a teiku, as unresolved with regards to this issue of whether there's dikoy in Shabbat or not. Now, boyimine Rava mi Rav Nachman. So Rava now asks Rav Nachman, Zarak kezayit truma bayit tamei mahu. Person who throws a kezayit worth of truma into a house that is tamei, what is the din? So he asked him, Lamai, what are you asking about? Ilyinyin Shabbat, if you're talking about Shabbat, ki grogeret beinan, the minimum shiur to be chayav for carrying on Shabbat is a grogeret if you're going to eat it. So throwing kezayit is less than the requisite shiur, so it should not be chayav on Shabbat. So what's the question? Ilyinyin tuma, if you're talking about tuma, kabeitza ochlim beinan. You need a minimum shiur of a kabeitza, and you haven't met that minimum shiur. We're talking about a kezayit again, not a kabeitza. Now, with regards to tuma, this is a very difficult situation here from a lot of perspectives. One of the most important here is this kabeitza ochlim, that you need a kabeitza ochlim for tuma. There's a machloket throughout Shas between Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi himself is not even so consistent. He changes his mind in a couple of places about this. And Tosafot also sometimes brings down an alternative opinion. But their basic question is, for food to accept tuma and to convey tuma, is there a shiur? Now everybody agrees, for our food to convey tuma to other items, you need a minimum of a kabeitza. You need a minimum of a kabeitza to ochlim, to give it significance and to convey tuma to other items that come into contact with it. On the other hand, to receive tuma, does ochel have a minimum shiur? So Tosafot over here says that is the case, that there is a minimum shiur that you need, and that's kebeitza tochlim. You need a kebeitza worth of food to accept tuma, not only to convey tuma, but to accept tuma. Rashi, on the other hand, believes that you can accept tuma bekoshuhu. Any amount of food, and the smallest minute amount of food, is mikabel tuma. To convey tuma, you need a kebeitza. But to accept tuma, you only need a mashu. One of Tosafot's proofs is from our Gemara right here, which is, it seems from our Gemara over here, that when we're talking about the Inyan Tuma, that you need a minimum of Kebeitza Ochlim V'inan. You need a minimum of a Kebeitza over here to make this Tamei. So it sounds like from here that to accept Tuma, to become Tamei, you need a Kebeitza Tochlim. So Tosafot says that's the case. He does try to explain Rashi's Shita here a little bit. He says, even Rashi believes that food can accept Tuma B'Kolshu, still a Hechsher the Kabel Tuma. There's another requirement that food items that are going to be mikabel tuma or ra'oi the kabel tuma first have to be washed. They have to have water that passes over them before they can be kabel tuma, or one of the liquids that the Torah says, yad shechadam, that is the acronym for the liquids that are makshir the kabel tuma. Rashi requires a minimum of a kabeitza to have hechsher. So even though he says you can accept tuma with any amount of food, in order to have hechsher the kabel tuma, you need a minimum of a kabeitza. Tosafot says that he thinks that's what Rashi's opinion is, and that's the way Rashi darshans it in other places. Now, what happened here is he tosses this kezayit with the truma, and the kezayit truma lands in this house that is tamei. When it lands in this house that's tamei, the item is becoming, or it seems to be that it's making something else tamei. How does that happen? And so that's what the Gemara explains now. The olam l'inyan Shabbat. The question here is about carrying on Shabbat. Go on, de'ika pachot mi kebeitzat ochlim. There's less than a kebeitzat of ochlim in the house. V'hai mashlimo the beitza. And this kezayit of truma now makes it to come to a size of a kebeitza. Mai. What's the din? Midit starif linyan tuma michayev nami linyan Shabbat. Because there is a significance given to this item because of tuma, maybe that's enough now to say that you've carried on Shabbat. Oh, dilma kol linyan Shabbat kegored ba'inan. Does Shabbat stand independent? So the question is here, does Shabbat have its own rules and nothing else can impact it? Or does Shabbat allow us to look in other areas of halacha? And if in other areas of halacha it gives it significance, then for Shabbat it will have significance. This comes up, for instance, with regards to Sukkah. It's an important halacha that comes up in Sukkah. Mechitzot on Shabbat have certain requirements, and without those requirements it's not classified as a mechitza on Shabbat. Sukkah has certain dispensations. For instance, by the third wall. You don't need a complete wall for the third wall. If you have just four tefachim of a wall, even one tefach and a little more with lavud and a framed out wall, that's considered to be a wall for sukkah. So now on Shabbat, how do I look at that wall of the sukkah? Do I say, well, because for inyan sukkah, lalacha for sukkah, this is a wall. So if it's good enough wall for sukkah, it's also a good enough wall for Shabbat. And I can carry inside of the sukkah because it's a reshut hayachid. Or do I say, no, sukkah independent, Shabbat independent. Yes, it'll be a wall for sukkah. No, it won't be a wall for Shabbat. Gemara is posing the same question here, linyan tumah. Shabbat has a minimum requirement of a grogeret, and here you don't meet that minimum requirement. So maybe you just can't carry on Shabbat with this kezayit. You can't be culpable because you don't have the minimum requirement. Or do I say, because within the world of tumah, I've done something significant. I've changed the status of an item. And since I've done something significant within the world of Tumah, does that make it significant for Shabbat, even though it doesn't mean the requirements that Shabbat would require by itself? And that's the Gemara's question. A person threw a kezayit worth of Tumah. Kezayit of Tumah is tahor, it's completely fine, but it does not meet the minimum requirements, nor for Tumah, not for Shabbat. But when it lands into a pile of food. That pile of food, with the joining of the kezayit, makes up a kebetza. Now when it makes up a kebetza, again, this is part of that machlok we saw before. According to Tosafot, it's much easier to read the Gemara. When it makes up a kebetza, that allows it to be mekabel tumah. The kezayit shumah by itself would not have been mekabel tumah, because it's below the threshold of a kebetza. When it joins with the other food that it lands with, now it has that size of a kebetza, and the shumah can become tamei now, because altogether now you have a package that is mekabel tumah, and it allows this food to become tamei. So within the world of tumah, something significant happened when it landed. It landed into a kebetza, and now it becomes tamei. According to Rashi, it can become tamei even without the other food there, because you don't have this minimum requirement of kebetza. It only can convey tumah when it meets that requirement of kebetza. I think you can argue for Rashi as well that something significant happened here. Even though the kezayit itself could become tamei whether there was a kebetza or not, what did happen now when the kezayit landed here is you created an entity that now can pass on tumah. So something within the world of tumah happened here. You've changed the status of an item. Until this point, it could only be mekabel tumah. Now it can convey tumah. So something significant happened in the world of tumah. So that's the Gemara's question here. If it's mitzarif linyan tumah is mechayev nami linyan shabbat or duma, kol linyan shabbat kugorit binan. Amalei tenitua. We have a Tanaic work that Abba Shaul Omer, Shtei Alechem, Velechem Apanim, Shiuram Kirogeret. The Shtei Alechem and Alechem Apanim, the Shiur to carry them is a Krogeret. Vamai, why is that true? Why is the minimum requirement to be Chayav Hotza'ah on Shabbat a Krogeret like any other food item? Don't we have other significant Shiurim with regards to Lechem Apanim and the Shtei Alechem, which is Lema, Midlinian Yotzei. Yotze is that you take the item out of the mechitzot that you're allowed to have it in. That is, for instance, shtei lechem lechem apanim must be eaten within the azara, by the kohanim, by the male kohanim. They're not allowed to remove it from the walls of the azara. If they remove it from the walls of the azara, then you have what's called yotze. It's left the area where it is kasher to eat or kasher to be, and it becomes pasul immediately. What is the size that has to leave in order to be problematic? Bikazayit. The din of yotze applies to a minimum of a kezayit. So if there is a minimum shiur in terms of some other halachic realm, for instance, yotze like kezayit, but in Shabbat, not even kezayit. Why don't we say by Shabbat it's also the requisite kezayit? When I take it out of the azara, I'm carrying it out of the azara. That's hotza'ah b'Shabbat. So I'm carrying it out of the azara and I'm doing hotza'ah b'Shabbat. At the same time, this korban, or really it's the shtei lechem lechem banim, become pasul b'yotze. What is the minimum requirement to become pasul b'yotze? That's a kezayit. If you're less than a kezayit, you're not going to be held culpable if you eat it, and so on and so forth. It might be a sur, but it might become yotze, but it's not significant. You need a minimum of kezayit to be significant in yotze. So if it's significant to be yotze with a kezayit, why by Shabbat might patur until you meet the minimum shiur of grogeret? What do you see from this? That the worlds live separately. Shabbat is its own entity. Kodshim is its own entity. You can't bring the two together, and the same will be true by tumah. Shabbat lives by itself. Tumah has its own dinim, but they don't impact Shabbat. Gemara says, "Achi Ashta, how can you compare the cases?" Hotam the afkei chutz luchumat azara ifsalei biyotze ashabbat lo mechayiv adamapik le rishut arabim. You have to remember that there are different points in time or space where things happen. Just because you leave the Azara does not mean you're Chayav Hotza'a on Shabbat. Because when you leave the Azara, you can end up in a number of places. When you leave the Azara, you can either end up in the Ezrat Nashim, which is outside the Ezrat Yisrael, the main door to the Ezrat Yisrael, the Shar Nikanor. If you exit through Shar Nikanor, which is the eastern gateway, eastern doorway to the Ezrat Yisrael, if you exit that way, you're going to land in the Ezrat Nashim. The Ezrat Nashim is not a Rishut HaRabim, because it's walled in, it may not have the requisite number of people, it's just not a Rishut HaRabim. So when you leave the Ezrat Yisrael and go into the Ezrat Nashim, have you already crossed over the threshold for Yotzei? The answer is yes. Once it leaves the Ezrat Yisrael, it's already Pasul in terms of Kodashim. In terms of Hotza'ah, are you in violation of moving from Rishut Yachid to Rishut HaRabim? The answer is no. So over here, the significance of a Kazayit for Yotzei is not relevant at the moment that you do the Hotza'ah. Because your Hotza'ah won't be done until you leave off of the Mikdash completely. The other possibilities are you leave from the other doorways of the Azara. The other ways of the doorways of the Azara land you on Har HaBayit. But around the Mikdash itself, the walls of the Azara, there was a secondary enclosure called the Chayel, which was a fence. Not clear if it was a wicker fence, a woven fence. Some sort of fence was an indication of where non-Jews were allowed to go to. That was the last point on Har HaBayit where they were allowed to enter. It's talked about with regards to Chanukah that the Yevanim broke Pirtzot there. They made breaks in it to show that they could enter that area. And later on, they fixed them up. And the Cheshmonim introduced or established that they used to bow down every time you passed one of those breaks that they had made in the Chayel. But nevertheless, what you have is when you exit the Azara, the Ezrat Yisrael, you don't land on Har HaBayit. You land in this area that's still encircled or enclosed with a fence. So again, does Yotzei happen immediately when you leave the Azara? The answer is yes. Does Hotza'ah happen then? The answer is no. Hotza'ah doesn't happen until you exit the Chayel. You have to exit that fenced in area as well. So since they don't happen simultaneously, the significance of the Gezayit of Yotzei can't impact for Shabbat. Because by the time you get to Hotza'ah of Shabbat, the thing's already possible by Yotzei. The significance of the Gezayit already happened before you were ever Chayav for Shabbat. So the two don't happen simultaneously. As opposed to our case over here, Hocha, Shabbat v'tuma v'day hododi ga'atyon. Over here, the violation of Shabbat and the significance within Tuma happened simultaneously. And when it happened simultaneously, that's where our question is. Our question is posed in an instance where the other halachic realm simultaneous with the violation of Shabbat happens. By our case, it's simultaneous. That's why we have a question. Proof that you tried to be v'shtem alechem lechem panim, it doesn't happen simultaneously. So the question doesn't really arise. Because the psul of Yotzei happens before you ever are in violation of Hotza'ah. And so because of that, it doesn't matter that Yotzei has a shear of Kazayit. Because it's not going to be relevant. When you're doing Hotza'ah for Shabbat, it's already psul. It's not becoming psul at that moment. It was already psul. Now with our case, when you toss the Kazayit is not chayav until it lands. Now, that involves or supposes a number of items. And then one of them is that we pass on like the Chachamim, that something in motion is considered in motion until it lands. And it has to land on an item that is of some significance or grounded. And you're not chayav until it lands. We had the position of Rabbi Akiva, which is kluta kemisha huncha damya, that something in motion is looked at as being discrete motions. And therefore, when it crosses over from Rishut HaRabim to Rishut HaYachid, you're chayav right away. Because as if every time that the item moves through the air, it's just you put it down, picked it up, put it down, picked it up. And therefore, when as soon as it crosses into the Rishut HaYachid, you'd be chayav. So over here, you have to say what we're holding like the Chachamim, that we are subscribing to the position of the Chachamim, that you're not chayav until the object lands. So therefore, when the person throws it, they are starting the Akira. The Hanacha doesn't happen until it lands. Where does it land? It lands on top of this Ochel that is Tamei, that is Mashlimo, that finishes it off to be a Kebetza. At the moment it lands, that's when you have Hanacha, that's when you have Chayav Shabbat. At that same moment, that's when the significance for Tumah happens. That this Kazayit of Truma then becomes Tamei at that moment. What's interesting here is that there are a number of suppositions that the Braita makes about what happened. Number one is that it was a Kazayit Truma that you threw. What happens if it's less than a Kazayit of Truma that you threw? Why should there be any difference in the din? When you threw less than a Kazayit Truma and it lands and it's mashlim to a Kabetza, the same thing happened. So why does it have to be a Kazayit and not a Chatzi Kazayit? That's the first thing that we have to at least address. Why is that the case? Tosafot asks the question. He says, because The item itself, even though the significance is attained at the moment it lands in the house, but the item itself has to have some sort of significance by itself. And that's what he says. He says that gezayit worth of truma is restricted from zarim eating it, but if it becomes tameh, it also now has a significance as a gezayit truma that is tmeah. And therefore, he says, yesh lomar, mekol makom gezayit chamir tvei. Gezayit is more chamor, shari zayit hu shi'ur lo kol tala b'chol makom. That anytime you get malkot, it has to be a minimum shir of gezayit. V'gdavka lebayit tameh. Another thing he says is, it has to land in a bayit tameh. Why does the house have to be tameh? Why does the bright insist that it be a bayit tameh? A bayit tahor, look, there are two things that happen here that we say that cause the problem with the truma. One is it has to have its own significance, which is that it's the size of gezayit, because gezayit has significance other places in the Torah. It has significance for lukot alav. And without that significance, even if in the end it ends up landing in tuma and making up a kibetza, that would not be enough. That's why a chatzi gezayit is not enough. It has to be a gezayit. Second thing is, it has to be a bayit tameh, not a bayit tahor. Why don't you say that there's significance to this item? Because it's asur lezar. That a kezayit of truma cannot be eaten by a zar, even if it's tahor. So why are you looking for tuma to make it significant? The item is significant within the world of truma because it's a kezayit. A kezayit is something that you would be chayav on for zarut, if someone who was a non-kohen came and ate it. Afagav the chashiv lekol alav zar ochlo mishumachi lo chashiv pachot mikgroed came into isur zarot lo bayidei hotzazu. That's what it says, and this is what many of the Rishonim say here, that it has to be that the isur is generated by the violation of the isur shabbat. This kezayit of truma, if it wasn't tamei, can a zar eat it? The answer is no. Can a zar not eat it before you threw it? The answer is yes. Couldn't eat it beforehand. When it lands, he can't eat it? No, he can't eat it when it lands. So the hotza'ah did nothing to change the significance of this item. Since the hotza'ah itself did nothing to change the significance of this item, you can't say because it's significance by truman, by azar, therefore by hotza'ah it should also be significant. When we say that hotza'ah is significant is when the hotza'ah does something to change the status of the item. And that's only true by truma. Over here, the item was truma tehora until this point in time. When it lands, it becomes truma tmeya. Something happened to this item, significant, which is now, not only can Zarim not eat it, Kohanim can't eat it anymore. So this item's changed its status because of what you did, because you threw it. Before this point, it was kosher Kohanim, asur Zarim. But now when it lands, not only is it not kosher Zarim, it's not kosher Kohanim anymore because it became Truma Tmeya. So since you generated something significant within the world of Truma and Tuma, through the action of hotza'ah, that's when we say, is that significant enough to be hotza'ah? But just because an item is significant somewhere else in halacha, doesn't automatically mean that you're going to be chayav for hotza'ah. And that's why Tosafot says that the braita here is very particular about what the case is. That it has to be, number one, a minimum of a kezayit, so that it is significant within the world of truma. Number two is that it went into a bayit tameh, not into a bayit tahor, so that the hotza'ah itself is what generates the problem, and not that the problem existed or pre-existed. And the other thing is zarak, that it was thrown. And that is, again, because Omari, the achinokat zarak, the hashtu bahadei adadei ka'achin, the machayv leyin shabbat adanach. Because when you throw it, then the only time it becomes a hanacha is when it lands. On the other hand, if you were to carry it and place it down, once you reach within 3 tefachim of the ground, it's considered as if the hanacha happened. And that's before it comes into contact with the tuma. It's only when it's thrown that it has to come to a stop or stationary to consider hanacha. So for all three of these halachot, the braita is particular that it's zarak, a kezayit, and that we're talking about a bayit tameh, in order that what happens is when the hotza'ah is completed, that's when the significant event for tuma happens. And because of that, that's why the Gemara poses the question over here, since it's significant for Tuma, therefore it should be significant for Shabbat. Again, the Gemara does not come to any conclusion about this, it leaves it inconclusive. Then, Gemara says, Chazar v'chiniso enu chayav ela kishi uro. If in our Mishnah, we discussed this yesterday, that if he takes it out, intending to plant it, then he changes his mind and brings it back in, thinking that he's going to eat it now. When he changes his mind and brings it in to eat it, he's not culpable for that return. So Gemara says, pshita. What's the question here? So, that he threw it into the silo, into the storehouse, and the area where he threw it is clear. The first thing Abaye says is, when he turns around and he changes his mind, he doesn't say anything. He doesn't say, oh, forget it, I'm going to eat it. Forget it, I'm not planting this, I'm going to eat it. That's what we thought until now. He's taking it out to plant it. Then he decides, you know what, forget it. I'm not planting this. I'm going to eat it instead. So when he does that, we said it changes the requirement for a shiur. On his way out, he was chayiv or culpable because he had the requisite shiur for zriah. On his way back in, when he thinks he's going to eat it, he doesn't have the requisite shiur. He doesn't have the minimum shiur, so he's not going to be culpable in that case. But what Abaye suggests over here is what happens if he's silent? He walks out to plant it, and then he doesn't say anything. And then he just takes it and tosses it into the storehouse. The action that he did indicates that he changed his mind. Because if he still intended on planting it, he wouldn't have thrown it into the storehouse. So that already is a clear indication that he doesn't plan on planting it anymore. He plans on eating it, putting it into the storehouse with the rest of the grain that's going to be eaten. But, on the other hand, makomonikar, the place that it landed, is still recognizable. So if he wanted, he could walk in there, pick it out, and take it out again. So that's the question over here. Maldutem, I would have thought, came into makomonikar, since the location is visible, bimilte kamaita koi. Since he intended when he took it out to plant it, and he hasn't said anything or done anything that negated that thought, maybe it should remain that way. Kamash Malon, the answer is, midizarki lo tzar betule batle. Once he throws it into the silo of the storehouse, that is a nullification of his original intent to plant it. It's clear here now that he intends to eat it and not plant it, even though he can walk in there and pick it out again. But because he threw it, the action of throwing it in there and dismissing it as a plantable item and just putting it with everything else, that in itself is enough to negate the thought process that I wanted to plant it originally. Okay, next Mishnah. Motzi ochlim v'natnan ala iskopa. He took food from inside the house and he places them down on the threshold outside. Ben shechazar votzian, whether he then, after he placed it down, picks them up and takes them out. Ben shotzian acher, whether someone else came then and picked them up off the threshold and took them out into the shud harabim. Patur. In all these cases, you are patur. Midei shlasa melachto bevat achat. So you have a problem over here. You don't have an akira and an hanacha. Did the akira from the reshut yachid was in the house, places it down on the iskopa. So he has an akira without a hanacha. Then someone comes and picks it up off the iskopa and places it down in the reshut harabim. They have hanacha without an akira. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, what type of iskopa are we speaking about over here? Because that will influence what the outcome of the case is. So we'll get to that in 1 second. Kupa shimlea peirot. You have a basket full of vegetables, fruits, v'natnal iskopa, and you place it onto the threshold, hachitzona, on the outside. Afopi shvo peirot mi bachutz. Even though the majority of the items that are in the basket are outside, have crossed already over into Reshut HaRabim, patur, actually, let's see it called a kupa. Patur until you remove the entire basket. Right, so now the Gemara is going to investigate this Mishnah. Hi, iskopa. This iskopa, my. What type of iskopa, what type of threshold are we talking about that's outside the door? Ilema iskopa Reshut HaRabim. If you're talking about iskopa of Reshut HaRabim, patur. Then you should be patur. Ha come up mishut yachid reshut rabim. When you took it out of your house and you placed it down on this threshold outside, you're chayav right away. You picked it up out of the reshut yachid, which is your house, and you put it down on this iskopa, which is classified as a reshut rabim. It's classified as a reshut rabim. You should be chayav right away. You just took something from reshut yachid to reshut rabim. How can the iskopa be classified as a reshut rabim? Two possibilities. One is that it's below 3 tefachim. It's less than 3 tefachim off the ground. Therefore, it's batel to the Reshut HaRabim, and it's a part and parcel of the Reshut HaRabim. The other way is, if it's 9 tefachim high. If it's 9 tefachim high, and it's used for B'nai Reshut HaRabim, the Katfiyale, to adjust their loads or to rest their loads on, because it's the proper height, or it's a good height for them to rest on, then it becomes part of the Reshut HaRabim, if it is 9 tefachim high. So if it's less than 3 tefachim, or it is 9 tefachim, then it could be useful for the Reshut HaRabim, and it's classified as a Reshut HaRabim. And therefore, if you took it out of your house and placed it down there, you should be Chayav. Ella, what are you going to suggest? It's Skopa Reshut Yachid. It's a threshold of Reshut Yachid. Reshut Yachid requires a minimum of 10 Tefachim high, and 4 by 4 Tefachim in terms of width and length. So here, if this threshold is at least 10 Tefachim high, and 4 by 4, it's classified as a Reshut Yachid. In that case, true, when you take it out of the house, and you place it down there, you move from Reshut Yachid to Reshut Yachid. Fine, great. But when the person or you picks it up from the iskopa and then takes it out to Reshut HaRabim, why did the Mishnah say you are patur? You've now taken it from Reshut Yachid out to a Reshut HaRabim and you should be chayav. And that's what the Gemara says. If it's iskopa, Reshut HaRabim, ben shechazar votzian, ben shehotzian acher, patur, hamapik mi Reshut Yachid to Reshut HaRabim. You're taking it out from Reshut Yachid to Reshut HaRabim. Why should it be patur? Ella, iskopa karmelit. It must be that this iskopa has this in-between status. And that status is a Carmelit. Carmelit is anything from above 3 tefachim, below 9 tefachim, and 4x4. So it has a 4x4 space of length width, and it's between 3 and 9 tefachim high. So it's not significant enough to reach Rishut Yachid, but it's not insignificant enough to be a Rishut Rabim. That is classified as a Carmelit. Now, Min HaTorah, a Carmelit has no status, and a person who carries into a Carmelit or out of a Carmelit is Mutar. But the Chachamim made the Carmelit into a location which is not a Rishut Yachid and not a Rishut Rabim. So Min HaTorah, you are Patur. Patur Aval Asur. So therefore, someone who's Oker from the Rishut Yachid takes it out of their house and places it down on the threshold, which is a Carmelit. They're patur because min haTorah they did nothing. But midrabanan it's a sur because they did an akira and they were meniach down in the Carmelit. Then if that same person either picks it up from the Carmelit and now takes it out to Rishut Rabim, or another third party does it, then you're taking from a Carmelit, picking up off a Carmelit and putting it down in Rishut Rabim. Again, midoraita you've done nothing, so therefore you're patur. But midrabanan that is a sur. And that's the explanation of our Mishnah that says patur in this case. Eliskober Carmelit vakamashlan. Time of the Nach B'Carmelit comes to teach us that because he placed it down in the Carmelit, that's what gives the dispensation to say you're not culpable for a Chatat in this case. Halo Nach B'Carmelit Mechayev. Had he not placed it down in the Carmelit, you would be Chayav. What does that tell us? Matnita and Tulog Ben Azai. Our Mishnah is not like Ben Azai. Long-term memory, you have to go all the way back to the first parak where you mentioned Ben Azai. Ben Azai said, and Hayamud Bet, the Tanya of a Braita, Motzi Michanut de Platya, someone who takes out from the store. A store is classified as a Rishut Yachid. Platya is the main thoroughfare, is the Rishut Rabim. Terech Stav or Sityo, through the area of the colonnades. Chayav. He is Chayav because he carried from Rishut Yachid to a Rishut Rabim. Now he passed through this area of the colonnades, which is a quote-unquote Carmelit, an area that's not classified as a Rishut Rabim. That doesn't matter because he did the Akira from Rishut Yachid and he put it down in Rishut Rabim. Doesn't matter that he passed through this area on the way. On the other hand, Ben Azai says you're patur. Ben Azai puter because he passed through a Carmelit on the way. You have to go from a Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabim directly, otherwise you're not chayav. Over here where you pass through this area that's not classified as a Rishut Rabim because colonnades make it difficult to navigate through that area, and it doesn't have clear thoroughfare. Since it doesn't have clear thoroughfare, it's not classified as a Rishut Rabim. By passing from the Rishut Yachid through this area of the colonnades, out to the Rishut Rabim, you pass through an area that you're not chayav for. According to Ben Azai, even though you didn't stop in that area, it still removes the culpability. Our Mishnah is not saying that. Our Mishnah is saying the only reason you're patur over here is because you stopped and put it down on the Carmelit in between. Our Mishnah is like the Chachamim, the position of the Chachamim, that you must stop in that area in order for it to nullify the carrying from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabim. And that's what our Mishnah says. You have to put it down on the Carmelit. On the other hand, Ben Azai says, even if you don't stop, it disqualifies or nullifies they carrying from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabim, and that's obviously not what our Mishnah says. Our Mishnah says you have to place it down. Our Mishnah doesn't say if he walks from inside his house to the Rishut Rabim, he's patur because he walked through the threshold. That our Mishnah does not say, and that's what the Gemara said, Makdita and the Loka Ben Azai. Now, as far as the kupa, the basket that is mentioned in our Mishnah, Amar Chizkia, Lo Shanu Ela Vekupa Mleya Kishuim Veduluim. Our Mishnah is talking about a case where we're talking about long and large vegetables. So therefore, when you place the basket on the edge of the Rishut Rabim and the threshold over there, even though the majority of the basket is in the Rishut Rabim, nevertheless, there's a portion of every piece of vegetation that's in there that's still in the Rishut Yachid. Talking about a long zucchini, a long gourd. So that long zucchini, okay, the zucchini or three quarters of the zucchini is in Rishut Rabim, but there's still a part of the zucchini that's in Rishut Yachid. And that's why you are patur in our Mishnah. On the other hand, aval mleach hardal, on the other hand, if the basket was full of mustard seed, chayav. There you'd be chayav. Because if three quarters of the basket is outside, that means that three quarters of the mustard seeds are in the Rishut Rabim. Each seed is small enough that it itself is out in the Rishut Rabim. A quarter of them aren't. But the three quarters are, and you're going to be chayav for those three quarters you moved out into the Rishut Rabim. Alma kasavar, you must conclude from this that Chizkia believes, eged kli lo shmei eged. The basket joining them together doesn't make them into a single entity. So here you have a basket full of mustard seed. You can look at it one of two ways. You can either look at it as a single item, a basket full of mustard seed, or you can look at it as a basket full of discrete items, tons of mustard seeds. So it's clear that Chizkia looks at them as discrete items, as full of mustard seed, and the basket's irrelevant. So that shows you that the basket is not a unifying force over here, according to Chizkia. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilum Leach Hardal Patur. Even if it's full of mustard seed, you are patur. Alma kasavar, must be that Rabbi Yochanan holds eged glish me eged, that the basket makes it into a single entity, even though you have discrete items in the basket, until the entire basket has left the reshut yachid, you're not chayav, because that is what you're carrying now. You're carrying a basket full of mustard seed, you're not carrying mustard seed anymore. Amar Abzera, matnita and aloki chizkiya deka, aloki Rabbi Yochanan deka. Our Mishnah has difficulty for Chizkiya and difficulty for Rabbi Yochanan. Chizkiya lo deka, it's a problem for Chizkiya because it says, ad sheyotzi et kol hakupa. Until you remove the entire basket, you're not chayav. Taima de kol hakupa. Until the entire basket has left. Ha kol haperot patur. Had all the vegetables left the area, you would still not be chayav. Why is that? According to Chizkiya, it should have been that as soon as the vegetables leave the whole area, that's enough to make you chayav. You don't need the basket to leave. Alma kasavar, it seems from our Mishnah, eged kli shmei eged, that the kli itself is a unifying force in the Mishnah, because until the entire basket leaves, you're not chayav. Rabbi Yochanan lo deka, it's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan, diktani. Afal pi shirot peirot pechutz, that even if the majority of the fruits are outside, time of the rov peirot. The reason you're not chayav in the Mishnah is because only rov of the peirot are outside. Ha kol peirot. If all the peirot were outside, afal gav da'agida kupa mi gavai, even though the basket's still on the inside, as long as all the fruits are on the outside, chayav. Amakasavar from a Mishnah. It sounds like a gli lo shmei agid, that the gli is not a unifying force in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says elakasha, so it's a question on both of them. And now the Gemara has to answer. The truth is, the real question is on the Mishnah. The Mishnah has two statements that, when you're medayek, the statements are contradictory. One statement seems to say that the basket matters, and one statement seems to say that the basket doesn't matter. So the way that Rabbi Zera formulated is that it's a problem for Chizkiya, a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. The truth is, it's a problem for the Mishnah. And so Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan are going to reconstruct the Mishnah, or amend the Mishnah so that it's consistent, but it'll be consistent in their position. So that each one of them will do that to answer the problem. Chizkiya mitaritz the Tamei, Rabbi Yochanan mitaritz the Tamei. Chizkiya mitaritz the Tamei, Chizkiya explains it according to his reasoning, ad sheyotzi et kol hakupa, until you take out all the kupa, b'me, dvarim umurim. When is that speaking about b'kupa melea kishuim b'duim? That's a medakupa full of zucchini and gourds. Aval malaya chardal. If it's full of mustard seed, nasik misho tzid kol akupa. It's as if you took out the entire akupa. So not like we were dyke before, that the whole kupa has to leave and not just the fruits. But the answer is that when you take out the items or the mustard seeds, it's if you took out the entire basket when you take it out, because there the basket is irrelevant. So that's how Chizkiya rereads the Mishnah to fit in to his position. Rabbi Yochanan mataretz l'tamei, afa bishro peirot b'chutz, even though the majority of the fruit are outside, velo ro peirot bilvad, not only when it's the rove, el afi kol peirot, even if all the peirot are outside patur, ad sheyotzi et kol hakupa, until you've taken out the entire kupa, you're not chayav. So both of them reread the Mishnah to make it consistent with their opinion. Meitevei. We have a question. A motzi kupat harochlim, person who takes out, again, we had this yesterday, the spice dish or the spice of the perfume sellers that have what we assume are a large tray with discrete perfumes or items within it. So he takes the kupat harochlim, not like his spropa yichitzona. He puts it on the outer part of the threshold. Afal bi sherova minim b'chutz patur ad sheyotzi et kol kupa. Even though the majority of the items are outside, you still are not chayav until the entire basket or the entire plate or whatever it is that joins them together leaves. So that sounds like Rabbi Yochanan's position, that until the entirety of the basket leaves, then you are not chayav. And that's a problem for Chizkiya. Kosalka datcha, we thought that this brightus on the case, bitzarere, when the spices that were there are ground down, they are like the mustard seeds. They are small, discrete items. And therefore, it's a kasha the Chizkiya. And it's a problem for Chizkiya, because over here, it's the equivalent of his mustard seed. And you see that the Braita says you're not chayav until the entire thing leaves. So the Gemara answers, obviously, that if we say kasal kadatra, we thought, the answer is what we thought was wrong. And what do we think? We thought that it was talking about these items that are wrapped up. Sorry, they're wrapped up because they were smaller, discrete items. We're talking about cases where we're talking about raw spices. For instance, cinnamon sticks, or items before they were ground down. So therefore, they are much longer. And that would be the equivalent of the diluim and kishuim for Chizkiya in the Mishnah. And that's why you're not chayav until you take the entire thing out, because these are items that have length to them, and even when you took it out 3/4 of the way, a portion of each item is still on the inside. Meitei Rabbi bar Abaye. So we're being a question from Perek Meruba and Baba Kamo, Hagonev Kis b'Shabbat. Someone who steals a wallet on Shabbat, chayav. Is chayav, shekvar nitchayev b'gneva, kodem sheyavod l'idei yisur Shabbat. You're chayav for stealing, before you violate the Shabbat. Hayam migarer v'yotzei, if you drag this item out from the place of the Balim, then he's patur for stealing, because isur gnevav, isur Shabbat ba'im ke'achad. The violation of Shabbat happens simultaneous with the stealing of the item. So now this is an important principle in the Gemara, which is what's called kimle derabimine. If a person is chayav mita, a person is culpable when it's going to, could receive a death penalty for what he does, then we drop all other issues that he has, at least monetary issues. For other things, it's a question about what you drop and whether karet does the same thing. These are questions in other places in Shas. But the basic idea being, if a person is in violation of Shabbat, and at the same time he's in violation of Shabbat, he does something that makes him chayav, obligated to pay money, he won't have to pay the money because he's paying with his life. There are two different ways to formulate that. One is that, kimle derabimine, since he's getting the larger punishment covers everything. Or the other possibility is that he has a suspended sentence. If he's going to get killed, then we don't make him culpable for the other things. We can't punish him here, but in Shemayim, he's still chayav. So, Achoshen talks about that. If that's the case, there might be an inyan of, let's say, didei Shemayim. Even someone who's patur, because they are now taking the death penalty, it might still behoove them to pay back the money that they stole. Because they're not patur, they're not cleared, they're not exonerated from that. It's a deferred sentence because they're being killed. If that's the case, they should pay it back in order to clear up the problem. So that would be a nafkamina between how you think it functions. So over here you have a person stealing and a person violating Shabbat. If he violates Shabbat at the same time he steals, then he will be patur from the stealing. If he steals before he violates the Shabbat, he'll be chayav the stealing because they're independent of each other. They're two independent items. So the first case is a case where he picks up the money purse, he picks up the wallet, and he walks out with it. As soon as he picks up the wallet, he stole it. That's Hagbah. Hagbah is one of the kinyanim. You do Hagbah, you're chayav for stealing. When he's a chayav hotzah, not till he leaves the area, until he walks out of this reshut ha-yachid into the reshut ha-rabim. So the two were not simultaneous. That's the first case. The second case is where he doesn't pick it up, but drags it from the reshut ha-yachid out into the reshut ha-rabim. If he drags it from the reshut ha-yachid into the reshut ha-rabim, when does he chayav hotzah b'shabbat? When he leaves, the reshut ha-yachid moves into the reshut ha-rabim. When does he be chayav geneva? He's chayav geneva when he takes it out of the possession of the owner and moves it into the reshut ha-rabim. Now that's somewhat problematic. The Gemara there deals with it because you can't have a kinyan mishicha in a reshut ha-rabim. So the Gemara says it's talking about sidei reshut ha-rabim. It's the size of the reshut ha-rabim where mishicha works. Anyway, he pulls it out and he's chayav. Simultaneous with being chayav for hotzah, he's now making a kinyan for Gneva. In that case, since they happen simultaneous, he'll be chayav for Shabbat, but patur on the Gneva. Because they happen simultaneously, and we have kimle derabi minei. Now, the Gemara says, I don't understand this. Because based on what we've said until now, if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan, that a utensil makes an item a single entity, kadim le isur Gneva le isur Shabbat. The stealing happened before you violated Shabbat. Because he's dragging this money purse or this sack out of the Balabayit's house. When is he going to become culpable for violating the Shabbat? Not until the entire sack leaves. Because we said here that if you're inside of a pouch, you're inside of something, the pouch designates it then as a single item. So if it's a single item, then you're not chayav until it exits. But in terms of stealing, what are you trying to steal? You're not trying to steal the sack. You're trying to steal the money that's inside the sack. When does the money leave? The money leaves before the sack leaves in its entirety. That means that you were chayav or culpable for stealing before you ever became culpable for Shabbat. Stealing doesn't have this din that there's an aggregation by the sack. As soon as you take the money out, you're chayav. So over here, you took the money out, you're chayav. The sack leaves, you're chayav for Shabbat. It did not happen simultaneously. So that's a question on Rabbi Yochanan's position. The Gemara says, wait a minute. Idavke derech piv hachanami. If you took it out with the mouth side, that would be true. You took it out from the bottom of the sack, not the front of the sack. If you took it out with the front of the sack, you could stop before the sack was completely out, and the coins would already be, or whatever's inside it would be, outside of the Balim's Rishut, the opening, where you would open it up from, like a purse or a wallet, the side that you would open it up from. So when you open up that side, then you could access the item that you took out. So if you took it out with the mouth face outward, then even if you didn't get the entire sack or purse out, you could just open it out, stick your hand in, and take out the money that you stole without ever having the entire purse or sack leave the Rishut HaBalim. So again, you could be chayav for the Geneva before you were chayav Shabbat. But if you did it the opposite way around, you pulled it out from the base of the purse, and the mouth was towards the inside, as you dragged it out, even when you got it out and the coins were out, but the sack was still on the inside, you cannot access the coins that are inside. You can't access the coins. You need to pull the entire purse or sack out before you can access them. Then it does happen simultaneously. Hey, what about the seam? Who says he can't access it? If you're talking about a purse or you're talking about a sack here, he could just cut it along the seam and he could access the money. So there is accessibility to it, even if he didn't take it out from the mouth side, the opening side, took it out from the base side, but you could still access it without taking the whole sack out. So if he wants to do it, b'shokil, he can take it out, cut the seam, and take it out. My says we're talking about nasko over here. We're talking about pieces of metal, long pieces of metal. So it becomes the equivalent of dluim and kishuim. If that's the case, no item leaves until the entire sack leaves. My says, wait a minute, b'kevan d'ika shansin mapikle ad pumei b'shari b'shokil b'shansay agide migavai. Well, it has straps on the top to tie the purse or the sack down. Those straps are problematic now, because what he can do is he can drag the bag out, or the purse out, from its bottom. And he's dragging it along, and the mouth now reaches the threshold, or the point where it's going to cross over. He stops. And then what does he do? He unties the straps, and he sticks his hand in and pulls out whatever's inside. The straps still remain on the inside. So a part of this sack or purse are still on the inside. If they're on the inside, you are patur legabei Shabbat. But you're chayav geneva because the item that you wanted to take out, the metal, whatever it is completely out. So here again, we come up with a case where it's not so simple that they happen simultaneously. My answer is, delekishansin. There were no straps on this thing. That's one possibility. There were straps, but the straps were wrapped entirely around the sack. In order to undo the sack and undo the straps, the entire sack would have been out already, and the straps would have been out. So once you've done that, the Gneva and the Shabbat happen simultaneously. So the case has to be a case where he's dragging it from the base of the purse or the sack, he's dragging it out from the Balim's Rishut into the Tzidei Rishut Arabim, and it's got the straps around it that are either wrapped directly around it, and don't extend back into the Rishut Abalim, or it doesn't have straps at all, and therefore it's simultaneous with the time that you steal it, because you have access to it, is the time that you violate the Shabbat. Because of that, you have simultaneously come into that violation, and that's why over there you are patur, and it's not a question on Rabbi Yochanan. B'chein amar Rava. Rava said the same thing. Lo shanu ela b'kupa mleya kshuim duim. So I had a basket full of these long vegetables. Av mleya chardal chayav. But if it was full of mustard seed, chayav, like Chizkiyah. Alma kasavar eged kli lo shme eged. Abai amar. Abai said, afilu mleya chardal patur. Even if it's full of seed, then you are patur, like Rabbi Yochanan. Alma kasavar eged kli shme eged. At eged of a kli is called an eged. Kam abaye b'shita de rava. Kam rava b'shita de abaye. We know that they switched their positions. That's what the Gemara says. They originally had a different position, and then they changed them. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute, if that's the case, we have a problem, because Rami Abaye Adabaye Rami Durava Rava. We have a question in Abaye's consistency and Rava's consistency. Ditmar Amotzi Berot L'Shut Rabim. Someone who takes out fruits through Shut Rabim. Bayamar Biyad. If you carry it out with your hand, Chayav. Bikli Patur. If you take it out of a utensil, you are Patur. Rava Amar Biyad Patur. If you take it out with your hand, you're Patur. Bikli Chayav. Take it out of a utensil, you are Chayav. So over here, what do you see? You see from the position of Abaye. Abaye says your hand, when you carry it out, you're still Chayav. Why are you Chayav? Your hand is attached to your body. You shouldn't be chayav until your entire body exits the area. Yet he's saying that you are chayav. That sounds like eged kli lo shmei eged, or the eged guf lo shmei eged, despite the fact that Abaye, we said before, said eged kli shmei eged. He holds like Rabbi Yochanan. So how do we reconcile that? Rav amar biyad patur. Rav is just the opposite. Rav says eged kli lo shmei eged, yet when it's in your hand, he says, if you go out, that you are patur. Why? Because it's attached to your body, so it's to consider as if you didn't walk out with it. So if that's the case, we have an inconsistency in their opinions. The truth is, even internally, their opinions are inconsistent, because it mentions yad and kli. And by yad, they say one thing, and by kli, they say another thing. And within that statement, it seems they're inconsistent. The Gemara says ipuch. Flip their opinions with regards to yad. So now, it has to be clear to the Gemara that this argument that Abaye and Rava had were after they changed their opinions. Otherwise, it's not a question. Could have just answered that this is the position of Abaye and Rava before they changed their minds. But it's clear that the Gemara believed that this was after they changed their minds, and that's why it asks. It says, if Abaye believes Ekle Shmei Eged like Rabbi Yochanan, and Rava holds like Chizkiyah, then how could they have these positions in this statement of Itmar Amotzi Perot? The answer is, Ipuch. We're going to flip their positions in order that they are consistent. Gemara says, B'yad Chayav. How could it be that when you carry it out in your hand, you are Chayav? V'atznan. Don't we have the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in our Masechta? Pashut balabayit yadol achutz. The balabayit takes it, puts it outside in his hand. Benatalai ni b'tocha, and then he takes it out of his hand on the outside. Oh, shnatan l'tocha, the balabayit sticks his hand out, and he puts something in there. V'ichnis shnehem turim. They are both patur. So how can it be over there? We see there that your hand being separated from the goof is not true. It just can't happen. Because your hand is out there and you bring it in, or because you took something out and put it in your hand and you didn't drop it and they took it out of your hand, you're not chayav, you're not culpable. How can someone here say, b'yad you are chayav? How could you separate the hand from the body? Yomar says, that's not a problem. That's the difference here is, hotam l'malo migilam, well, halcha l'mata migimo. Depends where your hand is. Is your hand above 3 tefachim or below 3 tefachim? If your hand is above 3 tefachim, it's not considered if it's settled somewhere. You have an akira without a hanacha, or you have a hanacha without an akira. So because of that, it's separated. Your hand is considered to be a distinct entity that's still attached to your goof because it's above 3 tefachim. If your hand's within 3 tefachim of the ground, your hand becomes batel to the ground, and it's as if it landed on the ground. So in our case over here, we're talking about a case where it's below 3 tefachim. So if it's below 3 tefachim, when you took the akira and the hanacha, then that's significant because your hand is not considered attached to the goof and that becomes a part of the karka. In the case, or the Mishnah in the beginning of Shabbat, where it says that it was a separate entity and you're not chayav, that's when it's above 3 tefachim. Now Rashi concludes here, that time mishum d'lo nach v'lo mishum eged gufa. Rashi says, we've dropped the idea that the hand is attached to the goof, and has nothing to do with the body and the hand. It has to do with the fact that either the hand is above 3 or below 3. Below 3, it's considered to be as if it rested. Above 3, your hand is not considered to be a significant area to have it rest. And that's the only thing that's being discussed over here. On the other hand, the Re believes that hotam l'mal megimen v'itlen l'meymar d'shmei eged. That's what makes it into an eged. It's still considered part of your goof when it's above 3 tefachim, because it now is given independence from the ground. When it's below 3 tefachim, since it's not independent from the ground, it's considered separate from your body. So the reconnects the two. That's the question here. When we conclude in the end that you're chayav by yad, does that mean the Gemara has dropped the idea that we're talking about eged, or the concept of eged kli shmei eged? It has nothing to do with being attached to your body or not. Somebody has to do with, is this considered to be placement? Above 3 tefachim, not placement, Rashi. Below 3 tefachim, it is placement. According to the Re, the two are still connected. If your hand's above 3 tefachim, it's considered to be an independent enough entity now that it's connected to your goof, it's considered to be a eged shmei eged. If it's lower than 3 tefachim, your hand is batel to the karka, and it's separated from your body. If it's separated from your body, then you no longer have this idea of eged goof shmei eged. That's the question of how the Gemara concluded over here, according to Rashi or Tosafot, the idea being the same, that if it's above 3 tefachim, you're not going to be culpable. If it's below 3 tefachim, you will be culpable. Okay, we'll stop over here.